Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Where Do I Begin podcast. We are still in season two, so this is episode four. I know I've been away for a long while, so I kind of feel like I owe you guys a little bit of an explanation. There's just been a lot going on, you know. For example, I am starting a new role soon, so the process and the preparation for that has been taking my time, and then just other life stuff in general, mostly good things, so no cause for alarm, has been keeping me busy. So yeah, it's been a long time since I recorded an episode for you guys. But the good thing about this podcast is, to some degree, it doesn't really matter when I release an episode, because everything we're talking about is basically relevant now. And if it's not relevant now, it's going to be relevant in 3 months' time, or in a year's time, or in 5 years' time. So I think that's the beauty of, I guess, the genre of this podcast, because essentially we're talking about, you know, building wealth, investing, how to make your money stretch, and just, I guess, our relationship with money in general. So I just hope that all the episodes that I have recorded so far have been very, very useful. And as usual, if there is any questions that anyone has, I do know some of you do hit me up on the DMs about anything at all. I'm always happy to share my knowledge. And even if I don't know, I'm always happy to do the research for you. So please feel free to sort of like reach out. I do hope in 2023 I can find a better balance, just so that I can be a bit more consistent with you guys. I actually have one more guest that I wanted to bring on before the end of season two. So we've still got like another 6 more episodes to go before the end of season two. So I will definitely pick that up next year. But sometimes even scheduling like a time to record with guests as well can also be a challenge, because everybody's busy, you know, being adults. So it can be a little bit intense, and things can clash. But yeah, I'm just hoping I'll be able to create more capacity or find ways to balance things a bit better next year, because honestly, between work, life, church, and just other responsibilities that you have in general as an adult, it can be a lot. It can be quite challenging to stay consistent. So that's something that I'm definitely going to look into possibly changing in 2023. In the meantime, though, I'm sure the audio is given what it needs to give right now, because I have invested in a proper studio mic. So I hope the quality of the sound is much better. I'm always looking and thinking of ways to, improve the quality of this podcast. So yeah, I've missed you guys. I hope you guys have missed me too. And for this episode, we're basically going to continue with the theme, which is looking at the greats and the most successful investors and seeing if their philosophies and investment strategies are something we can implement in our own investment journey as retail investors. But before I get into today's topic, you all know the drill, so I will read out this disclaimer and then we can get started. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice. Therefore, any information discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy, and speak to a financial advisor. Please be aware that liability for any investment decisions made falls entirely on you. Any brands, companies, or investment platforms referenced during the duration of this podcast or future episodes are for educational purposes. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or advice given by guests solely represents the opinion of the guests and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So with that being said, for today's episode, we are going to talk about one of the greats, as I like to call him, the Godfather. We will be speaking about the one and only Warren Buffett. However, before we get into his investment strategy / philosophy, I thought it would be good to just sort of revisit his background a little bit. Because I feel like, you know, you guys might just find that interesting, or maybe not. So Warren Buffett was actually born in Omaha in 1930. He developed an interest in the business world and investing as early as age 11, according to my research. And he actually started his education at Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania before moving back to go to the University of Nebraska, where he received an undergraduate degree in business administration. Warren Buffett later went to the Columbia Business School, where he earned his graduate degree in economics. He began his career in investment as a salesperson in the early 1950s, but formed Buffett Associates in 1956. His mentor was Benjamin Graham, and less than 10 years later, in 1965, he was in control of Berkshire Hathaway. So I call Warren Buffett the Godfather because I just think that that's the name that describes him the best when it comes to investing, and as one of the key figures in the investment industry. But in the US, he's actually known or nicknamed as the Oracle of Omaha. And this is because he's had a long track record of picking really, really good stocks. As they would say, he's had a long track record of picking winners. His holding company, Berkshire Hathaway, has an outstanding portfolio, including the likes of Coca-Cola, Bank of America, Procter & Gamble, MasterCard Incorporation, Goldman Sachs, and many more. So those are just some of the holdings slash stocks that Warren Buffett has in his portfolio, and that the company Berkshire Hathaway holds in their portfolio as well. So that gives a little bit of a background into who Warren Buffett is. Ultimately, he is a value investor. So that is his investment strategy, value investing. I did speak about value investing in season one when I spoke broadly about different investment strategies as a whole. But today we'll do a deep dive into actually understanding what value investing is and what that looks like for you, and things to, you know, pay attention to if you want to be a value investor, or if you want to sort of follow a similar strategy in your investment journey. So essentially, Warren Buffett's strategy is all about investing in companies rather than markets. So his goal is to choose excellent companies with a strong track record. And he ultimately, you know, doesn't really focus on supply and demand intricacies of the stock market. However, he looks at a company as a whole, he looks at a stock as a whole. So some of the things you see Warren Buffett considering before he decides to buy and hold the stock are things like the company's performance, the debt to equity ratio, which is like, you know, how much debt the company has compared to its assets, for example, you know, what their profit margins are saying, etc., etc. So what is value investing? Value investing essentially is an investment approach that looks for securities whose prices are unjustifiably low based on their intrinsic worth. So intrinsic worth, or intrinsic value, is something, again, I've spoken about before in the past. And basically, the intrinsic worth of something or a stock is the real value of the stock, right? So for example, if we think about Tesla, for example, Tesla is a company that we know every now and then Elon Musk may go on Twitter and, you know, either make a huge announcement or decide to be a troll, for example, and as a result that affects the price of the Tesla stock. So when market respond to, I guess, whatever Elon Musk is doing on Twitter, that's not the real price of Tesla. Does that make sense? So let's say, I don't know, he says Tesla is coming out of a new technology, you know, that will be able to get us to space within 30 minutes, for example, you know, and as a result, you know, people are like really interested in this whole idea of, you know, going to space or being able to go to space within 30 minutes. That might cause the stock of Tesla shares to go up, the price of the stock to go up. That is not the actual real price of the Tesla stock. It's basically gone up based on hype, based on you know, maybe FOMO in some cases, has basically just gone up based on, you know, whatever it is that Elon Musk is trying to achieve. So that's not the real worth. So when we talk about the real worth of a stock, the only time you really know the real worth of a Tesla stock, or what the actual price of a Tesla stock should actually be, is when you look into much more more detailed things, like, you know, the performance of Tesla over the past couple of years, what's the company debt like, what are their profit margins like, or in situations where there are market corrections, which is the period we're in right now, where there's a recession, that's when you really see the real worth of the value of Tesla. So the thing with the investment approach of value investing is picking companies or picking stocks that most people don't necessarily look at initially, or they don't run to initially, because their stock price is just so low. But then the stock market basically essentially then picks up that, oh, actually this is a valuable stock, when the economy basically eventually picks back up. So I hope that makes sense. So I'm just gonna define it again in case you missed it. Value investing is basically an investment approach or strategy that looks for securities or stocks whose prices are unjustifiably low based on their intrinsic value. So the intrinsic value of a thing is the core value, like the real price, the real value of a thing, not based on hype or anything like that. And just for me to round up on Warren Buffett's background, because I feel like I digressed a little bit there. But his net worth is $100 billion as of June 2022. I don't know about you, but I would love to sit down and have a conversation with him one day and just find out, like, sir, is there anything else apart from this value investment strategy that you use that has helped you become this successful? Because I just want to know, how do I get my net worth to be $100 billion, you know? But all jokes aside, he's also known as a savvy businessman and a generous philanthropist. So yeah, that is a little bit of a background when it comes to Warren Buffett. He is the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, as I mentioned earlier. And Berkshire Hathaway actually has a market capitalization of over $600 billion. And Berkshire is the largest financial stock in the US market and among the 10 largest US public companies. Berkshire owns and operates a diverse range of portfolio companies, including familiar names like Duracell and Clayton Homes. Berkshire Hathaway's roots actually date back to the Berkshire Cotton Manufacturing Company of Adams Mass, established in 1889, and the Hathaway Manufacturing Company, founded in 1888 in New Bedford, Mass. I'm assuming all those places are in the US. And essentially, Warren Buffett bought this textile company because it wasn't doing well at the time in 1964. And then began using it as a platform to invest in other companies and industry. So the core of Berkshire's business has long been insurance, which provides steady cash flow to invest in other holdings in the stock market, essentially. So hopefully that gives you a bit more of a background and you've learned something new about Warren Buffett. So now let's get into today's episode. Well, we're already, the episode has started, but we're already talking about it. Let's get into his strategy a bit more. So as I mentioned earlier, he's a value investor, or should I say he's well known for his value investing strategy, which basically involves buying stocks that seem to be undervalued and selling them years later when they achieve their deserved market value. And the idea of value investing is rooted in the fact that in the short term, as we know, the market tends to overreact to sentiment and the media, therefore masking the genuine value of many stocks and causing some to be underpriced, and in some cases causing some stocks to be overpriced. But in this case, we are more concerned about stocks that are underpriced. Now, in order to be able to successfully be a value investor or use the value investing approach, it does require you to have some knowledge of investing. So it requires you sometimes to understand some complex mathematical, calculations. Can you work out, profit margins? Can you read an income statement? Do you understand a company's cash flow? Do you understand the business model, etc.? So these are some of the things that can be a bit complex when it comes to being a value investor. However, all hope is not lost, because guess what, guys? I always come with gifts, okay? So if you've been following this podcast for a while, at some point I spoke about investment ratios and how you can tell if an investment is going to be profitable or is worth, or if a stock is worth investing in. And one of the ratios I spoke about is something called the PE ratio, which is the price to earnings ratio. It's one of the quickest ways you can use to sort of value a stock, and this ratio can actually come in very handy when it comes to you trying to decide in a quick way and in a non-complex way, which stock is undervalued or which stock is a value stock. And the best way to do this is, I'll give you an example. I think I've mentioned this example before or given a similar one in the past, is let's take Apple as an example, right? So if you Google the PE ratio of Apple, it will come with a number. If you Google what the industry average, so let's say Apple is in the tech industry, right? So if you Google what the average PE ratio is in the tech industry, it will also come up with a number. If you Google what the historical PE ratio has been in the tech industry, it will also come up with a number. So now let's work with some numbers. So let's say for this example, the PE ratio, the average PE ratio in the industry is 15, right? And Apple's current PE ratio is 20. It would suggest that the stock is overpriced or overvalued. However, if the industry average stays at 15 and then Apple's PE ratio is now 10, then it will suggest that Apple is a value stock because it's below the average. So that's one of the quickest ways to tell if a company is a value stock or if it's undervalued and overvalued. Obviously, you have to compare it to the historical average as well. And if you know how to read cash flow statements, even better. If you know how to understand profit margins, even better. So all these different things, if you understand the business model of the company, even better. If you understand their target market, even better. So all these factors essentially can help you pick a good value stock to essentially invest in. There are also a few other guides that are not necessarily mathematical that you can look at. And this is literally straight from Warren Buffett. So I'm going to share some of those with you now. And hopefully that can help you when you're trying to decide which stock is a value stock and which stock you should essentially, invest in. So the first thing to look at is, or that Warren Buffett would advise you, would be to invest in companies that you know. This is one of Warren Buffett's key principles. And the reason he would suggest you invest in companies that you know is that you'd be able to judge the potential of the company and its products and service. You'd be able to discern how well this company is likely to do if it's a company that you're familiar with, because you've been familiar with the company means you're most likely also familiar with the product, the service, their business model. And as a result, if you do decide to invest in that company, you're not investing based off of speculation. You're investing because this is a company that you know very well. So let's take Tesco, for example. If you decide that you wanted to purchase a Tesco stock or a share in Tesco, for example, that's a company, or that's a store, should I say, that some of us frequent. We go to do our grocery shopping in Tesco's. Let's say every weekend when you go to do your grocery shopping, the queue is all the way to the car park. It'll be very easy to assume that, you know what, given that there's always a crowd at this store, they must be doing well. People must love their product or service. So that could be an indication that, okay, this might be a good company to buy their stocks or shares. But again, you have to consider all the factors. You don't just choose one factor and be like, yeah, I must now go and buy Tesco shares. Of course not. But if you do invest in a company that you know, then it means that during a downturn or when the company is not doing well or the stock price falls, you have a bit more confidence that your chosen company has strong values, for achieving success, and you have the confidence that they will bounce back regardless of what the financial situation, regardless of what the financial situation might be at the present time. So, you know, it's very important to essentially invest in companies that you know, and also they have to be companies that have been around for a while, that you can, you know, track their historical performance, and have been profitable, you know, for a while, which is another reason why you would never see Warren Buffett invest in a company that's 5 years old. Like, he doesn't do startups, and that doesn't fall into his school of thought when it comes to value investing, not because startups are terrible, but because they don't have that long history, that long-standing history where you can sort of not necessarily guarantee how they will perform, but that gives you an indication that this is not just a hype, this is not just a bubble, this is not just a fad. Like, you know, this is an actually solid company with, you know, good core values, with solid financial records that you can potentially, you know, invest in. So you will not find Warren Buffett investing in startups. That doesn't mean you can't invest in startups, because you can. However, when it comes to value investing, then you need to be looking at companies that you know very well, that have also been around for a very, very long time and have proven to be successful over that long period of time as well. So the second thing that Warren Buffett would advise you to look at when it comes to value investing is to invest in companies with a competitive moat. So these are the things that he looks at when he decides to choose a company to sort of buy and hold, or choose a stock to buy and hold, right? So a competitive moat essentially is a competitive advantage, which is, I guess, a term that most of us are familiar with. I do apologize. In the finance world, we like to use fancy words. So competitive moat, same as competitive advantage, same as USP, like your unique selling proposition or unique selling point, as some people like to say. So a competitive moat is something that sets a company apart from its competitors and helps it to outperform them. Okay, so like I mentioned, it's kind of like a unique selling proposition or unique selling point. So it basically goes beyond just the product or the service that business is delivering. You know, the most valuable competitive moats or companies that can really take advantage of the competitive moat are businesses that have moats that are hard for other businesses to copy. So if there's something unique about your business that gives you a competitive advantage, for that thing to be very valuable and to help you consistently outperform your competitors, essentially it means that all the other businesses have to find it very difficult to copy it. So a good example would be Google. You know, Google initially just started out as a search engine, but became very quickly dominant in the market because they had very unique algorithms. This is something that was very hard for the companies to, you know, try and spot and, you know, implement in their services as well. So that's an example of a company that had a very valuable competitive moat, because every company can potentially come up with something that they feel is their competitive advantage, but the value will be determined by how easy it is for their competitors to essentially, you know, copy them. So businesses that have either patented products or processes or tools or even unique technology that makes their service or products more streamlined or have better quality in the market, those are the things that make the moats much more valuable, and those are the things to look for when you're trying to determine which stock you want to, you know, essentially invest in, or which stock you consider a value stock that is worth investing in. Another thing that Warren Buffett would suggest is to invest in companies with a good management team. Now, this is one that's easily overlooked, because in your mind, you just want to invest, get your returns, and call it a day. You don't really want to think about the day-to-day operations. Are the employees happy? Like, do they have a good management team? Half the time, a lot of us don't think about things like this. So it's really important to actually understand why it's important for a business to have a good management team. The reason is because as a shareholder or as a stock owner, you know, you want a management team that will look after your interests as they do the interests of the business. And ideally, those two things should be tied together, or they should be aligned. But sometimes they're not always aligned. And that's where the problem tends to present itself. You know, this principle is really key to Warren Buffett's investment strategy, because he will tell you that you can always find clues about a company's management team in the way that it pays dividends to its shareholders. It will tell you that strong and steady dividend growth is always a good sign that, okay, this is a value stock, or this is a company or a stock worth investing in. You know, if the dividends are not strong, if they're not consistent, then it could be a sign that the company is probably going through some financial challenges. And for that reason, that will also disqualify it as a potential, you know, potential value stock. You know, if the employees are not happy and are not being treated well and they're complaining, or there's a high turnover in terms of the employees, then, you know, that can affect the success of the business, which would then affect your return as a shareholder as well. You know, so how the staff are treated is also an indication of, you know, how successful this company could potentially be and how far they could really grow. You know, companies with happy staff are more likely to thrive. And as a result, if other people hear that, oh, at this company, like, they have great benefits, you know, they invest in the development of their staff, you know, the best talents will also be attracted to want to work, you know, for that particular company. So all of these things essentially sort of work together when it comes to the shareholder getting healthy returns from, you know, their investment. A good example of this is Disney. I don't know if you guys heard in the news. I think this actually happened 2 days ago. Basically, the former CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, is back. I hope I'm saying his last name correctly. And the reason why he's back is because the person he had handpicked, Bob Chapek, to be his replacement after he attempted to retire, the staff didn't like him. They didn't like him. They didn't trust him. He tried to introduce some restructuring to make Disney more of a tech company so it can compete with, you know, all the other DSPs or digital sharing platforms that were very big on, like, streaming shows and programs. And now, the reason why the staff at Disney did not like Bob Chapek was because they felt like with the restructuring that he was doing, they felt like he was sort of taking power away from the creators, and more so focusing on, like, competing with, like, you know, other streaming platforms. So they felt like the quality of the shows was essentially, you know, going down. Another reason they didn't like him was the scandal with Scarlett Johansson. I'm not sure if you saw the tweet going around where she was basically sort of complaining that she wasn't paid correctly for the film that she starred in, which was The Black Widow. And as a result of all these issues and also the political stance that some of the political stances that Bob Chapek has, it actually caused the share price of Disney to fall. But I kid you not, as soon as Bob Iger returned, the former CEO came back, like, the share price literally went up again, and it closed up by 6%. It went up by 6% as of 2 days ago. So all of these things, like, are very much correlated. Even if we take another recent example with, like, Twitter and, you know, Elon Musk sort of firing people and, you know, just implementing all these new plans and structures for Twitter. At one point, people were hashtagging on social media saying RIP Twitter. I'm sure if you went to check the share price of Twitter that day, it would have fallen, even though it had just made a transition in from being a public company into being a private company. So all these things, like, essentially can affect, like, the stock price and the performance of a stock or a company. Imagine if all the Twitter staff decided to call off Elon Musk's bluff, and they decided that they were not going to return to work. What would have happened? Like, it would have literally just been a disaster. And I do feel like this is still going to affect, like, Twitter's performance in the long term, but how badly it's going to be affected, yeah, that's yet to be seen. So yeah, it's really important that a company has a good management team, because ultimately this trickles down to affecting the shareholder returns if you're an investor, if you're someone that's invested in this particular company, or you've bought the stock of this particular company. So paying attention to what's going on aside from just the share price going up and down due to the economic cycle is really important. Like, the culture of the firm is important, their attitudes towards ethical investing is important. Like, all of these things ultimately will affect your future returns as a shareholder.
So when it comes to value investing, the next thing that Warren Buffett will tell you to have a look at is your investment horizon. So he will tell you to invest for the long term. Warren Buffett is renowned for buy and hold. And as I've spoken in previous episodes before, trading is not the same as investing. Constantly buying and selling is not how you build wealth. It's not how, you know, you grow the returns from your investment. You have to buy and hold, which is why it's very important to pick quality stocks, pick quality companies. Even if you're investing in a fund, like, you know, it's important to look at the holdings or the stocks in the fund that you're investing in and just, again, apply all the things I've spoken about so far. Like, what do you know about the business? You know, what's the financial status of the business? You know, what's their management team looking like? You know, are they a business that are known to have lots and lots of different scandals? You know, all these things are important, you know, to have a look at before sort of settling on the fact that, okay, this might be a stock you want to invest in or otherwise. So Warren Buffett will tell you to invest for the long term. You will never find Warren Buffett basically buying into a new trend or as some people will say, a fad, only to have to sell the stocks in a few months' time. So I don't really want to digress per se when it comes to this point, but you won't see him buying crypto. Now, I don't want to debate whether, you know, crypto was a great idea or not a great idea, especially with the recent FTX crash. I might have a separate episode to discuss that, but the point is you would not find him investing into an area or an industry or a stock that, you know, again, doesn't have a long consistent track record of being successful, doesn't have a long consistent track record of generating healthy returns for the shareholders. Neither would you find him investing in stocks that seem to be trending. You know, that's not how he makes his investment decision. His strategy is always buy and hold. Even if you're gonna sell, you're selling at a much later date, not buying today, selling in 2 weeks' time or in 6 weeks' time. Do you get what I mean? So, you know, investing is not about a get rich quick strategy. It's a get richer eventually strategy. So I think that's the difference between trading. Trading is get rich quick, which never really lasts. But investing is get richer eventually, because there has to be a systematic, factual based approach, when it comes to investing, you know, for the long term. So buy and hold, guys. If you pick a quality company, like I mentioned, you know, my example earlier, even if the company is doing poorly for whatever the case might be, if it's a quality company, usually they're resilient enough to bounce back. So essentially you'll be confident buying and holding and riding that particular storm. And this brings me to the final point, or the final suggestion that Warren Buffett would say to you if you ever got the opportunity to sit down with him one-to-one. He will tell you to invest when markets are panicking, like the current climate. We started off in a bear market and now I feel like we're in a bull bear market. Between inflation and hiking interest rates and God knows what else, like, the market is just doing a lot right now. But, you know, he will say now is the best time to spot value stocks. Now is the best time to, you know, purchase stocks at a discount, because again, everything is all over the place. So you know, now is the time to now is the time where there are market corrections happening for some stocks. You know, some stocks that have been overpriced, you're now seeing their real value now, their real intrinsic value now that we're essentially in a recession. So the reason why Warren Buffett will also say the investment markets are panicking is because of volatility. So Warren Buffett understands that volatility is a part of investing. It's just that there are levels to it. I think I did a thread on this on my Instagram story a few weeks ago. People think that investing correctly means that you don't experience volatility. That's wrong. You know, you experience volatility because investing a lot of the times also mirrors what's going on in the economy at large. That also determines, you know, how well your investments are essentially going to perform. So volatility is not something you can sort of escape when it comes to investing. However, there are ways to manage it, you know, and if you picked a good stock or you picked a good company, then the volatility essentially will smooth out over the long term. So that's another reason to buy and hold, because if you are trading and constantly buying and selling and the stocks are volatile, it means you don't give the stock or the company enough time to sort of, you know, recover. So it looks like you're making money in the short term, but you actually end up losing more money in the long term with the constant buying and selling. So yeah, if you're not looking for a quick return, you can be rest assured that yes, there might be a little bit of volatility right now because, you know, there's inflation, you know, there's high interest rates, we're in a recession, like, you know, there's an energy crisis. Like, you can really just buy and hold and be confident that, you know, you can ride the storm if the company you have picked is a quality company or a quality stock, essentially. And because of this market correction, because we're in a recession, and so you're seeing the intrinsic value of some stocks, it means that, you know, this would be a good time to essentially see what stocks are actually worth, you know, what their core value is, essentially. So ultimately, when markets are panicking, the real challenge here is choosing a company whose share price has fallen, so who you can now see the intrinsic value of the share price. But with that being said, that company also has to be resilient enough to ride out the storm, as I've been speaking about. So a good example of this is the crash that was caused by COVID-19, right? A lot of businesses failed and never recovered, you know, as a result of the pandemic. And there were some businesses that survived. So the healthcare sector, for example, survived, the pharmaceutical sector survived, you know, the commodity sector survived, even though there were periods of shortages, but they survived. So a good way to also figure out, okay, what industries or what sector should I be investing in, is to think about whenever there's a huge economic crisis or whenever there's a huge crash, which types of stocks or which industries tend to you know, do well during times of uncertainty or during tough times. And that's where you really need to put your money in, because whenever that cycle comes around, whether it's an economic cycle or whether it's a pandemic, God forbid, but, you know, whenever something negative happens that could potentially, you know, affect the value of your returns, the businesses or the stocks that survive those periods, those are the stocks you should really be looking to invest in. And sometimes they might not be the most exciting stocks. You know, it might not be Tesla, you know, it might not be a futuristic stock, but it would be good to hold some of those stocks, you know, in your portfolio, in your fund, just to make sure that, you know, you're spreading your risk. And not only that, you're investing in companies that can withstand the storm, essentially. So those are quality companies. Any company that can bounce back, you know, is a quality company, essentially. So yeah, it's very important to not put your money into a sinking ship, essentially. So if the facts and the figures are telling you, yeah, it's time to call it a day, be smart enough to take your money out. So yeah, that brings us to the final point, which is to expect to make mistakes and plan around them. So with investing, yes, you can follow all these rules and all these guidelines, but every now and then you might make a mistake, because to make a mistake is human, right? Even Warren Buffett himself, you know, he's made mistakes and he will be the first one to admit it. One of the biggest mistakes he made actually had to do with the management point, choosing a company that has a good management. So in, I think it was in 1962, Warren Buffett had a quarrel with the company that he's the CEO of now, Berkshire Hathaway, because he was on the executive board / management. I'm not sure what the quarrel was about, but essentially as a result of the quarrel in 1962, he brought up the whole idea of him purchasing a controlling interest in Berkshire Hathaway. which meant, you know, he would have the largest holding, you know, one. And two, because he now has the largest holding, if he becomes the largest shareholder, then that means, you know, in terms of voting power, he'll be able to make some executive decisions with less people challenging him, you know. And whatever the quarrel about, I don't know the detail. There might be details of it online somewhere, but the long and short of the story is this decision of him buying up a controlling interest in Berkshire Hathaway actually cost him about $200 billion. Like, that's what pettiness will cost you sometimes. Do you get what I mean? So, and I think that because of this incident that happened in 1962, that's why he can tell us now that when you're looking at a company to invest in, you know, look at how well the management team is doing, because he did that and he saw how much it cost him and how much it cost the business. So that's clearly a mistake that he will not be making again, you know. And yeah, these things are essentially really, really important. You know, I know we all have a little bit of a petty bone in us every now and then, but before you do something petty, sometimes count the costs. If it's not that costly, maybe go ahead, but if it's going to cost you a lot, then maybe don't be petty. So yeah, Warren Buffett's pettiness cost him $200 billion. That's a whole lot of money. But I mean, they recovered clearly, because, you know, the market capitalization of Berkshire Hathaway is $600 billion, so they're fine. But you don't want to make that mistake, because I'm sure you don't have $600 billion or $200 billion to lose. So, you know, that's one mistake that Warren Buffett made, and he's clearly learned from, and that's why he can obviously give us his gems that I am now discussing with you. Another loss that he made, actually another mistake he made, was buying a shoe company called Dexter Shoe for about $433 million. And the reason he bought this particular company actually was because he felt that they had a competitive moat. You know, they had a competitive advantage of producing durable shoes compared to their competitors. But what he really didn't factor in is the fact that the US also had imports of shoes that were also very durable, of the exact same quality, but of a lower price. So, you know, he lost some money from that investment as well. So I think sometimes when looking at the competitive moat a company might have, it's important to not just look at the moat on a national level. It's also important to look at it from an international level. If when you look at what the competitive advantage is, and you look at what the international market is saying, and it's not really a competitive advantage because the country that you live in are bringing in imports of this particular product or service, then you might want to reconsider, you know, going ahead with that investment essentially. Another mistake he made was with Tesco. He had some shares in Tesco, and there was a period a few years back, I don't know if you guys remember, where, you know, Tesco was basically accused of overstating some of their profits, which then resulted in the stock price sort of tumbling. You know, Warren Buffett's mistake in this was not offloading or selling the Tesco shares when the rumors were swirling. And maybe one of the reasons is because Tesco had been around for a while, it'd been performing really well. So maybe at that point he had attached, you know, some sort of sentimental value to this particular stock. I don't know, I'm just assuming. But, you know, Warren Buffett is an intelligent man. If the facts and figures are saying otherwise, usually he would do the needful, which would be to sell the stock at that particular point. And then you can always buy back when there's been a correction. But in this case, for whatever the reason might have been, I don't know what he was thinking at the time, he did not sell his shares in Tesco. So when the price came tumbling down, obviously he made a loss, you know, on that particular investment. So I think this is a really good point to learn from as well, you know, when it comes to sort of like attaching sentimental values to stocks. You can be, you know, emotions are great because they I kind of see them as guides, but being able to sort of manage them and also use them with wisdom and using them with wise counsel, and combining that with the informed opinions of others, or even combining it with some education, could really save you a lot of stress and in some cases money. And I think this also applies to, like, you know, our day-to-day life decisions, you know, that we make. There's nothing wrong with having emotions or being emotional. It's just how does that affect, like, your decision making? How do you let your emotions guide you in terms of decision making? Because I think emotions are great guides. They could either indicate that something is really right or, you know, really wrong. But the only thing is, you cannot make a decision just based off of your emotions. You need to consider everything else surrounding that. I'm currently reading a book actually called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. I might do an episode on this book once I've completed it, because it sort of talks about, I guess, the behavioral finance side of things from what I've read so far. I'm sure it discusses other topics, but I think a good topic to address on this podcast as well would be our relationship with money, how our personalities and emotions affect, you know, the financial decisions essentially that we make. You know, you might not think those two things are tied together, but which stores you choose to spend your money at probably is tied to one emotion or the other, you know. So I think that would definitely be something, you know, worth sort of exploring in terms of, you know, how our emotions, you know, affect our financial decisions as well as, you know, other areas of our lives. But yeah, maybe that's something I'll pick up sometime next year. I don't know if I'll do it for season 2 or season 3, but we'll see. But ultimately, what Warren Buffett was saying when he says, you know, expect to make mistakes and learn from them / you know, plan around them, is to make sure you're always protected. You know, even though Warren Buffett made all these mistakes, you know, he didn't pull all his disposable income in all of these three companies. You know, he had other holdings, so even though he made losses in Tesco, he made losses in Dexter Shoe, you know, he still had other stocks in other industries that did well and were not affected by these other two decisions. So the way you plan for mistakes that you make when it comes to investing is by making sure that you have a diversified portfolio. Diversification is something that we have spoken about in the past, and essentially all it means is that when you buy stocks, or if you're buying a fund, make sure that the stocks in that fund or the individual stocks you're buying are from a wide range of industries. Because if you hold 5 stocks, for example, and all 5 stocks belong in the tech industry, the moment there's something catastrophic happening in tech, you lose all your money because you haven't spread your risk. The same thing applies when it comes to investing in similar industries. So let's say you bought a stock in tech and then you bought a stock in e-commerce. Those two industries, you know, is digitalization that basically is the link. So which means they will be highly correlated. So that means if something goes wrong in the tech industry as a whole, it will most likely affect the e-commerce industry, but also affects, like, your typical Apple stock. Do you get what I mean? So it's very important to sort of hedge against, you know, potential mistakes that might be on your part, or even be on the part of the market in general, you know, the people that are buying and selling in the market. So, and a good way to essentially do that is by making sure that your portfolio is diverse. So make sure you have a stock in tech, make sure you have a stock in consumer staples, make sure you have a stock in healthcare, make sure you have a stock in e-commerce. Just make sure, like, your stock or your fund or your portfolio as a whole is diverse, so that if an industry is down, either due to an economic crisis or whatever it might be, the others are not affected and you're still growing your money. So that's ultimately how you plan to hedge and against mistakes you might make, or to reduce the risk of losing too much money when there is essentially a crisis. In terms of critics for Warren Buffett, it would be very hard for you to find one. Because although he's made those three mistakes that I've mentioned, he's been more successful if we're going to weigh against whatever mistakes he's made. So really and truly, yeah, they were costly, but compared to the success he's made as a whole, you know, it's a little setback. I think that's what would be the best way to describe it. It's a small setback. You know, it hasn't affected his career or his net worth in such a huge way. So I think it's the best way to put it. The final thing I will leave you guys with is actually two things I'll leave you guys with is I'm gonna go through the top 10 holdings that Warren Buffett has in Berkshire Hathaway, or that are ranked by the percentage share of Berkshire Hathaway's overall equity portfolio. So these figures are sourced from the company's most recent filing with the SEC, which is basically the Securities Exchange Commission, their regulator, and this is dated as of 16th of May 2022. Obviously, you can do additional research on the stocks as well. So I've always said, if you're new to investing and you don't even know where to start, if you don't want to try index funds, which are highly recommended, by the way, and also highly recommended by Warren Buffett, you know, you can always look at what the most successful investors are investing in, and you can potentially do some research around that area and then invest in those. Again, you can always check this with your financial advisor, but let's go through the top 10 holdings that Warren Buffett holds. So you have Apple, the ticker for that is AAPL. You have Bank of America, the ticker for that is BAC. You have Chevron Corporation, the ticker for that is CVX. You have Coca-Cola Co, the ticker for that is KO. You have American Express Co, the ticker for that is AXP. Then you have Occidental Petroleum Corporation, ticker for that is OXY. Then you have Kraft Heinz Co, the ticker for that is KHC. Then you have Moody's Corporation, their ratings agency, financial ratings agency. The ticker for that is MCO. You have US Bancorp, ticker for that is USB. And then you have BYD Co Limited, and the ticker for that is BYDDF. Again, those top holdings or those top stocks that are held in Berkshire Hathaway, of which Warren Buffett is the CEO, are Apple, Bank of America, Chevron, Coca-Cola, American Express, Occidental Petroleum Corporation, Kraft Heinz, Moody's Corporation, US Bancorp, BYD Co Limited. I also mentioned Duracell earlier, and I mentioned Procter & Gamble earlier. So if you're looking at what stocks to potentially buy, those might be some of the ones you want to invest in, because Warren Buffett invests in them and they have been successful over the long term. So yeah, those are some of the stocks to essentially look at. Another good thing about these stocks, and the fact that it was taken from the filing that was done with the SEC, is that because the SEC are a regulator, you know, it means that these stocks, their financial statements are regulated and are publicly available. So with these financial statements being publicly available, these documents can essentially help you analyze the current performance of the stock and the past performance of the stock, so you can make the important investment decisions that you essentially need to make. So that brings us to the end of today's episode. I hope you guys have enjoyed it and have picked up, you know, one or two things that would be useful. Hope you've learned a little bit more about Warren Buffett as well. Thank you so much for listening. Please share, follow, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. As usual, if you have any questions about anything said in this episode or future episodes, please feel free to send a DM on Instagram at @wheredoibegin_pod, or drop me an email at info.wheredoibeginpod@gmail.com. And this is me officially signing out for the rest of the year. So this will be the last episode for this year, but we'll continue with season 2 at some point in the first quarter of next year. So I am wishing you all a merry, merry Christmas in advance, and hope you all have a great and fantastic new year. So take it easy, guys, and